coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here from Hussein here. Coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here from Hussein here. Coming chained here to Karbala. Will cry for you, time will pass and you remain. In the heart a voice keeps calling out, oh Hussein. With 72 men you face the tyrannical Yazid the ruler. Oh Hussein, ghariban bi Karbala, on the holy day Ashura. Strong you stand alone, representing Muhammad and your father Haydara.
I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
I will come again here, for Hussein here. Coming chained here to Karbala. Was blood for you because the water was ashamed to descend while you're dying thirsty, Ya Hussein. When you stood alone saying, am I not the holy prophet's grandson? Now the thousand men that you quench with your holy hand leave you abandoned. But the Shia will mourn you till today, for you are eyes of Zamzam.
I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
I will come again here, for Hussein here,
coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
The rocks, but your love will never change. Stronger than the rocks are the hearts who love Hussein. Oh Abbas, this is me, Sakina, so please return if you can hear me. I will never ask you for water, just one look from you will relieve me. You promise me that you'll look after me, so Abbas, how could you leave me?
I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
I will come again here,
for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
I will come again
here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala.
I will come again here, for Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here for Hussein here. Coming chain here to Karbala. I will come again here for Hussein here. Coming chain here to Karbala. I will come again. Will cry for you, time will pass and you remain. In the heart a voice keeps calling out, oh Hussein. With 72 men you think.
Aflaha man salla ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد والثناء لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد عجل فرجهم. Brothers and sisters, respected Sheikh Salim, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. عظم الله أجوركم إن شاء الله. And on behalf of the Light of Guidance, we welcome everybody to another nightly program for the Muharram program entitled On His Path, A Husseini Life. Inshallah, to get the program started, we're going to welcome our dear brother Ali Hamdani to recite from the Holy Quran after a salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
Can I please have another salawat?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم تبارك الذي بيده الملك وهو على كل شيء قدير الذي خلق الموت والحياة ليبلوكم أيكم أحسن عملا وهو العزيز الغفور الذي خلق سبع سماوات طباقا ما ترى في خلق الرحمن من تفاوت فارجع البصر هل ترى من فطور ثم ارجع البصر كرتين ينقلب إليك البصر خاسئا وهو حسير ولقد زينا السماء الدنيا بمصابيها وجعلناها رجوما للشياطين وأعتدنا لهم عذاب السعير وللذين كفروا بربهم عذاب جهنم وبئس المصير إذا ألقوا فيها سمعوا لها شهيقا وهي تفور تكاد تميز من الغيظ كلما ألقي فيها فوج سألهم خزنتها ألم يأتكم نذير قالوا بلى قد جاءنا نذيرا فكذبنا وقلنا ما نزل الله من شيء إن أنتم إلا في ضلال كبير وقالوا لو كنا نسمع أو نأكل ما كنا في أصحاب السير فاعترفوا بذنبهم فسحقا لأصحاب السير إن الذين يخشون ربهم بالغيب لهم مغفرة وأجر كبير وأسروا قولكم أو اجهروا به إنه عليم بذات الصدور ألا يعلم من خلق وهو اللطيف الخبير والذي جعل لكم الأرض دلولا فامشوا في مناكبها وكلوا من رزقه وإليه النشور أأمنتم من في السماء أن يخسف بكم الأرض فإذا هي تمور أم أمنتم من في السماء أن يرسل عليكم حاسبا فستعلمون كيف نذير ولقد كذب الذين من قبلهم فكيف كان نكير أولم يروا إلى الطير فوقهم صافات ويقبض ما يمسكهن إلا الرحمن إنه بكل شيء بصير أمن هذا الذي هو جند لكم ينصركم من دون الرحمن إن الكافرون إلا في غرور أمن هذا الذي يرزقكم إن أمسك رزقه بل لجوا في عتو ونفور أفمن يمشي مكبا على وجهه أهدى أمن يمشي سويا على صراط مستقيم قل هو الذي أنشأكم وجعل لكم السمع والأبصار والأفئدة قليلا ما تشكرون قل هو الذي ذرأكم في الأرض وإليه تحشرون ويقولون متى هذا الوعد إن كنتم صادقين قل إنما العلم عند الله وإنما أنا نذير مبين فلما رأوه زلفة سيئت وجوه الذين كفروا وقيل هذا الذي كنتم به تدعون قل أرأيتم إن أهلكني الله ومن معي أو رحمنا فمن يجير الكافرين من عذاب أليم قل هو الرحمن وآمنا به وعليه توكلنا فستعلمون من هو في ضلال مبين قل أرأيتم إن أصبح ماؤكم غورا فمن يأتيكم بماء معين صدق الله العلي العظيم صلوا على محمد وآل محمد.
أفلح من أعاد الصلاة على محمد وآل محمد. Inshallah, just a reminder of the announcements before we welcome our dear Sheikh Salim. If we can just please ask everybody to make sure that they are abiding by the face covering. And then we do have the live stream set up downstairs and in the nursing room right at the entrance. Inshallah, if there are any mothers who need to take their children into that room or if any kids maybe need a little bit more space downstairs, the live stream is set up. Inshallah, with that, we'll welcome Sheikh Salim with three loud salawat ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، ولعن الله الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين من يومنا هذا إلى قيام يوم الدين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. Respected brothers, sisters, may Allah reward you for your participation in our gathering here on this evening of Tasu'a, on the evening of the ninth day of Muharram. May Allah Ta'ala count our efforts here as being worthy of our being considered among the mourners and grievers of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, in order to attract the special attention of Allah and His mercy to our gathering and the special attention of the Imam of our time. Let's recite a salawat, please. Our topic has been regarding the Islamic lifestyle. One of the things we've been doing is to see different ways in which our current lifestyle, or let's say the predominant lifestyle here in American culture, what are those things that make up that lifestyle that may be barriers for us to be able to adopt an Islamic lifestyle. In the recent lectures, we've been speaking about the topic of happiness. And we were looking at the state of the community, saying that one of the problems that we have is that of depression. Many people in our community, outside of the community, they're afflicted with depression. And we talked about how some of the approaches that have been taught to us by, you know, the prevalent version of health may not be the most effective way of dealing with depression. And we talked about how when we look at things from a more holistic perspective, we can see what are those type of nourishing essentials that can help us to have more happiness in our lives, inshallah. Now, one of the topics that's related to this that I want to speak about this evening, inshallah, is that about happiness itself. Because we've just been assuming that happiness is a good thing. And the reason why we assume that is because it's kind of obvious, isn't it, that we always want to be happy. I mean, who doesn't want to be happy? Just, you know, hakuna matata, just, you know, don't worry, just be happy, right? And so it's kind of just something that we assume happiness is good. You know, smiling is good. The smile emoji is the one which is the one that you want to be sending people, right? Not the sad emoji or all the different variations of that. But this is something actually, when we start to open it up and look at it in more detail, we can see that the very topic of happiness and the understanding of happiness is something which has an important role to play in our lifestyle. Meaning, depending on how somebody defines happiness, how they seek that happiness, it can affect the choices that they make in their lives. I want to begin, just like in the previous evenings, by relating a couple of incidents from the events that took place in or leading up to the tragedy of Ashura in Karbala. So one of them is from the day of Ashura. There's a hadith that's reported from Imam Ali ibn Hussein, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, where he says that on that day, there were many people who were part of the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, who, as the day progressed and it got closer to that time when the battle was going to begin, and then the battle began and the blood started to be shed, there was a number of companions who their color in their face started to turn white and they started to shake and their hearts were trembling. On the other hand, he says that there was Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and there was those among the companions who were his khasa'is, meaning that his khas companions. We can imagine the likes of, you know, obviously his family members, and we can imagine the likes of Habib and Zuhair and the others like that. Muslim ibn Awsajah, Burair Hamadani, and others must have been in that group. For them, as the day progressed, their faces were glowing and they became more firm, and not that they were shaking, rather they were more firm in their stride. And their breaths were measured, meaning that there was a sense of deep calmness, should we say satisfaction, should we even say happiness, that they were experiencing at this time. And when Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees the others who are trembling, they're fearful, he gathers them together and he starts to explain a different perspective. He talks about life, he talks about death, he talks about life being just a bridge. I mean, who cares about what happens on the bridge? You're just waiting to get to the other side. So he sort of reframes the experience for them so that they can partake in that type of calmness, satisfaction, happiness that he himself and those of his khas companions are experiencing. So that's one story that inshallah we can think about. You know, we're going to come back to it. The second one is a story of Habib ibn Madahir, you know, the great companion, that it's similar to a story that we talked about from Burair al-Hamadani. On the day of Ashura, Habib ibn Madahir, we say that the history says that at one point, you know, he was talking to somebody and he laughed. He laughed out loud. Okay, and his companion rebuked him, said that, you know, why are you laughing? You know, it's, you know, we're going to battle right now. This is not a time for laughing, Habib. Now, Habib is an elderly man, right? He's a wise person. He doesn't do things just like that. But imagine that his companion thought it was so out of place that he actually rebukes him for it. And Habib, you know, responds, says that, what do you mean? You know, like, why shouldn't we be happy? What is there to be fearful at this point? We're just one step away from the awaited paradise. I mean, after all, this is what we've been created for. This is where we're achieving our purpose, in other words. Now, both of these incidents, they give us a deeper perspective on happiness. You know, somebody who looks at what's happening, they'd be like, there's nothing happy about this. It's all sadness, it's all tragedy, it's all misery. And there is a lot of tragedy there. There is a lot of misery. But happiness is not something which is just single dimensional. There's different layers to it. And so, inshallah, we want to look at this in more detail in the speech today. Now, let's look at some feature of our current, of the predominant lifestyle. What's happening in American culture? Just like in the past, I want to take you back a little bit in history. Let's go back to the 1960s, or 1950s, 1960s, after World War II. There's a big economic boom in the United States. And people who before were not so wealthy, now they started to get wealthy. And there's a huge shift now to consumerism. There's a lot more access to different products, goods, and people just have a lot more. Now, around this time, there is a change in the way that people are looking at life and what's important and what's not important. And to sum it up, let me give you an example or two. So Just to example, in 19, they did a study and they said that in 1960, they looked at how many A grades were given to students in schools. Like A, B, and C, and F, right? So look at how many people are getting A's. And then they did another study in 2008, how many A grades were being given. In the span of that much time, three times more A's were being given in 2008, I believe, than in 1960. So what's happening here? You know, is it the case that all American students are getting, you know, better at their, you know, math and their reading and the literacy and their, you know, arithmetic? Or, I mean, obviously, that's not the case. What's happening is that the standards are changing. And that's just a small example of what's happening, you know, in terms of the mentality, the culture. There's a culture developing. It's based on a type of psychology known as positive psychology, where the idea is that no one is a loser. Everyone is always a winner. You are always right. And what's good is what's good for you. What's good is what makes you happy. It's, you know, another way of looking at it is that it's sort of like the idea of the happiness revolution. What's important is living a happy and a joyful life. And it sounds really good, doesn't it? You know, the idea that, you know, let's forget about other types of things. Let's try to go for, just let's just be happy. So you see in recent decades, like maybe actually in the recent decade, in university, right, what is the most popular class in different, some of the universities which are considered like the top universities in the world? The most popular class, like for example in Harvard, Stanford, other schools, is a class, are classes which teach students how to design their lives so they can live joyful lives. Or classes that teach people about the art of finding happiness in life. Now it's interesting that at the same time that students are rushing to take those classes, the rate of depression and anxiety among those same students is also higher than it was in previous decades. So you have a growth in, you know, a population which is suffering. They have mental health problems, but at the same time you have this type of happiness movement. Now, what are some of the slogans of this movement? So, you know, like for example, in one of the most popular books that's used on this topic, they advertise this. They say, follow what engages you and excites you, what brings you to life. Okay, and like, okay, that sounds good. I want to do things that are I'm engaged with. I'm going to do things which are exciting, right? And that's going to give me life. Yeah, that sounds, I mean, it sounds pretty good, right? And, you know, everyone is a winner, like I mentioned. It's interesting, like even when it comes to the American diet, they did a study. So there are different types of foods that Allah has created for us, right? There's a different tastes that these foods have. You have food which is sweet, you have food which is sour, right? You have food which is spicy, you have food which is bitter. Now, if I were to ask you, how many bitter foods can you name? Right? Just mentally, in your head, see if you can do that. Think about how many bitter foods do you eat? Okay, just ask yourself. Right? Is anybody able to think of more than two? Three? I mean, do we have anybody out in the audience who's thinking three, four? Maybe some of the people who are more experienced, elderly, they might come up with more. But I think for most of us, it would be hard to come up with bitter foods that we eat. You know that chocolate in its essence is bitter, right? But who eats bitter chocolate these days, right? Everyone has chocolate and has like a lot of like sugar and other things. And it's very, so in the past, right, our, like let's say two generations, three generations before, people used to eat food, you know, across the spectrum. They would have bitter food, they would spicy food, you know, sour food, whatever. They would eat different types of foods. In the past, they say that there was 800 bitter herbs that used to grow in America, and now it's like 8. And the diet now has become something where it's just almost like the American diet is one which is based on sweetness. That's it. So you see here, there's a correlation here. How people eat, what they avoid, and how what they're looking for in life as well too. How people parent their children. You know, along with this move towards like, okay, let's award all students higher grades, where nobody can call out anybody and tell them that they're wrong, comes an approach towards parenting which is known as like helicopter parenting, where I want my child to never suffer at all. You know, like I won't let them fall. I won't, why? Because I'll never put them in a situation where they'll fall down, right? I won't ever let them, like let's say, climb the jungle gym in the playground. I won't let them play with other children because I'm scared of them getting germs. And we do have, you know, cases like this. I mean, at least, you know, people, families where they're ultra, like let's say, concerned about their child even being like hit or told a bad word or called a, you know, a name or something like that. It's like, no, forbid, God forbid. Right? And then it goes into like how they approach academics, like the parents are always hovering over them, not letting them ever like get a bad grade on an assignment. If need be, they'll step in and they'll do the assignment for them because they don't ever want their child to face any failure. This, brothers and sisters, is what then defines a lifestyle. A lifestyle based on seeking some type of happiness in everything that we do. But now we need to look and see, is this the happiness that actually we want to be looking for? Is this healthy for us? What does this lead to? So I want to look now at some of the consequences of taking this approach, and then inshallah I want to look at what is some of the Islamic teachings we have on this topic. You can help me with the salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Now, brothers and sisters, when somebody takes this approach, we have a principle that's given to us in the Quran, Surah Yusuf, where Allah Ta'ala says, "A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim, inna an-nafsa la'ammaratun bis-su'i illa ma rahima rabbi." You know this verse. Allah describes the nature of human beings. Human beings, Allah says, have a soul. The soul, la'ammara, it definitely, for sure, commands oneself towards su, towards things which are not profitable for them. They're not in their best interest. So clearly, when somebody takes the approach of like, okay, well, the most important thing for me is that I want to be happy no matter what. I never want to face any bitter moments. I never want to have any bitter experiences. Then what's going to happen is they can easily replace happiness, true happiness, with basically whatever fulfills their pleasures, their desires. بَلْ يُرِيدُ الْإِنسَانُ لِيَفْجُرَ أَمَامَهُ. Human beings, the human being desires to, if he was let free, he would desire to sin his entire life. Some people are like that. We see the effect of that, where sometimes individuals, this is part of the lifestyle again, when they come up with any challenge, there's something stressful at work, right? There's a family problem, there's a disagreement that they have, they get a bad grade, what do they turn to? They turn to destructive habits. Sometimes people, you know, when they get stressed, right, what do? They go and they eat a lot of fatty food, right? Or, you know, other things, right? Sometimes things which are not even, you know, they're outside of what's halal. And even though they do these things, they find their comfort, let's say, in comfort food, or they go, let's say, what is it called when you go on Netflix and you binge watch? They go binge watching Netflix. You know, people have said that, you know, this is what I do. This is my stress coping mechanism. Whenever I have any difficulties, I just go, you know, I'll be up until 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll watch a whole thing of, you know, binge watch a whole like series, a whole season of some show. Now, people who do that, what are they looking for? They're looking for some relief to the sadness that they're facing, the grief that they're facing. But what ends up happening, and studies have shown this, is that that relief is short-term and the grief is long-term because of that. They end up suffering more because of whatever that destructive habit is. That's one of the outcomes of this type of approach. Another one is that when people have this type of approach, then They're like, okay, the moment I feel anything, any type of like sadness or like that, I need a pill to make me feel happy again. And this itself is a crisis, right? When you have people just searching, they don't know any other mechanism except for, okay, give me that thing that I need to just swallow, and I want to be done with the sadness. They don't know how to do it. Because why? Because the lifestyle, the perspective is one that sadness and negative emotions are bad. I need to be happy all the time. I'm entitled to be happy all the time. So they're like, I need that pill. And, you know, is there a pill? Have they discovered the magic pill that when you swallow it, suddenly all problems go away? If there is, I haven't heard of it, right? I don't think our, you know, we have esteemed doctors among us right now. I don't think they know about it either, right? And then on a third level, right, sometimes what happens with this type of approach is that there, people develop a very low tolerance for any type of discomfort, sometimes for things that they need to do, like salah, right? When I become somebody who is a creature of comfort, what I need is, I gotta have everything in place all the time the way I want. If anything is even a bit off, I'm gonna like throw a tantrum, whatever, right? Then what about salah, right? What about fasting? There's a story that's told of Ibn Sina, where Ibn Sina, Avicenna, was one of the greatest scholars, right? He was like just a genius. He was such an amazing in so many fields, philosophy, medicine, all these things, right? So one of his students was like so impressed with him. He says that, you know, Ibn Sina, you should declare that you're a prophet and you can basically form your own religion. That's how good you are. He's like, Astaghfirullah, right? What are you talking about? Like, how could I do that, right? And his student is like, no, you're just, you know, like he just thought that highly of him, right? So what happened is one time Ibn Sina and his student were traveling, and it was cold, it was winter time, and it was cold at night, so, you know, they're sort of journeying, and it was cold night. Now, the Fajr time comes, the Adhan comes, you know, in that town, and Ibn Sina's awake, you know, he's hearing the Adhan. His student is asleep at that time. So he wakes him up, and his student says, Ustad, like, what do you need? What can I help you with? He says that, I want you to go get me a glass of water. I know it's cold, right? It's like winter time. And his student's like, oh, well, you know that in medicine, you know, it's not good in the morning time to, you know, to eat, like, to drink like cold water, and it's very cold and that type of thing. And he says that, no, I'm your teacher, you're my student, I want you to give me some water, right? So he says that, his student's like, no, you know, you've taught me that what's good for you is better than like what you might say. So, you know, I know that you told me this, but it's better for you, so I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm so sorry, right? So then Ibn Sina says that, okay, well, you know, you remember that time you told me that I should be a prophet? Here I am, I'm your teacher, right? I'm living at the time that you're living in. I'm in front of you. I'm telling you I want a glass of water. And because of your attachment to your sleep and not wanting it cold, you're not doing that. And here this Mu'adhin is reciting this Adhan, and he's saying that, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And people are waking up and they're doing ibadah, even though they haven't lived at the time of the Prophet for hundreds of years, right? How could I ever be a prophet? Do you see how futile that exercise would be? Right, what is the point here? The point here is that, like, the prayer, right, the different ibadat that we're asked to do, they entail some type of discomfort, at least at the beginning, until somebody, you know, gets to the higher understanding of these and can experience them. Then it becomes a pure act of joy. But they're difficult. And if somebody takes this approach that anything which is a source of discomfort, it's bad, I need to take a pill for it, then what are they going to do when it comes to their ibadat? So this is where, brothers and sisters, it's important for us to realize that there's a different way of approaching happiness. Happiness is good, but what type of happiness? Right? Not every type of thing that we might see as something that is happy, which is good, is necessarily good for us. So inshallah, I want to mention a few examples of that as time permits, with the help of a salawat, please. So one point that I'll make this evening, brothers and sisters, is that the teachings of our faith, and also some of the traditional teachings we have, how people approach happiness in other societies, they see some types of sadness as actually being opportunities to arrive at a greater stage of happiness. Sadness, yes, but we can take that and go towards a greater state of happiness. For example, let's say that somebody is, we've given this example already, like somebody's feeling depressed, right? We talked about how one of the first things that they can do is to look at these six nourishing essentials. We talked about diet, we talked about sleep. Another one of them is that traditionally, classically has always been studied is that of movement and being both movement and also being stable, meaning like basically how is it that somebody moves their body and when do they rest? Rest and movement. One of the, let's say somebody's feeling like sad down, right? One of the things that they can be looking at is what is their exercise routine? And I'm giving these as practical tips, and the reason is that some, you know, this is the reality, that we have issues which sometimes they go back to these type of things. Just to give you an example, they did a study where they had a group of women who were depressed, and they said that, okay, let's try to address it through exercise. And they divided them into three groups. One group, they were lifting weights. Another group was running. And the other group was, something got delayed, we're not going to actually do anything. So they basically delayed it. There was the placebo group. Now, it was an eight-week trial. After four weeks, they started to notice that there was significant change in the people who were doing the exercise. And after 8 weeks, the effects of the exercise was such that it lasted for 1 year afterwards. Now, that sadness was something that was actually a signal for them that, hey, there's something wrong, right? You gotta fix some of these essentials. If you wanna grow, then you have to fix these essentials. That's point number one. The second thing is that when somebody is facing sadness, it could be something which is a spiritual sort of trigger. Here, it's a signal. It's telling you that you need to, you know, change something. You need to look at something deeper. I'll give you an example. One of the areas where sometimes depression occurs is when somebody gets to an age where they start to realize that now they're going downhill from here. You know, it's sometimes called like a midlife crisis, sometimes it's called like old age depression. It's a natural thing, right? The way that God created us is that we hit our peak, let's say, you know, around 30, 33, whatever it may be, right? And then it's, you know, no matter how fit you are, no matter how well you take care of yourself, right, you start to go downhill. If you go look at the Olympics, look at the ages of the people who are participating. There's a reason why it's rare that you find somebody who wins a gold medal and then they win it again in the next Olympics, right? It's because there's a natural process that's kicking in. Now, when that occurs, right, one way of approaching it is to say that, you know, this is bad. Why? Because being sad is bad. I need to figure out a way of getting rid of this, right? Another way is to look at this and say that, hey, maybe there's actually a message here for me, right? I'm starting to realize that I am in the process of departing from this world. That's actually something which is positive because I'm not supposed to stay here in the first place. These opportunities, like let's say that, you know, we find that, I don't know, the younger people are like, let's say, you know, they have more energy than we do. Like we see that now there comes a certain point where you are now giving more than you're taking from others. That's actually a signal, all right? What am I doing to prepare for the next stage of my life? There's a riwayah which is a very, one of those riwayat that like really shake you up, right? It's a very powerful riwayah. It says that when somebody reaches the age of 40 years old, Allah Ta'ala commands the two angels that guard them, and those angels, Allah tells them, shaddida wa ghalliza. Right now that this person has reached the age of 40, be more severe, right? Be more firm. Everything that this person does now, whether it be small, whether it be big, whether it be a lot, whether it be little, write it down and preserve it. Right now, so you might say that, brother, you're depressing us even more now, right? Because like these type of things, they're scary, right? Like they're not very pleasant. But ask yourself, is it really? is it really something which is sad and depressing, or is it something which can give you life? Right? Because after all, right, it's something that's inevitable, something that's a certain outcome. We are going in this direction. Isn't it better to be in the state of readiness and preparation for it? Where, okay, everything that we're doing, it's aligned with that, you know, journey that all of us are taking. This is what a different approach towards happiness and sadness would involve. Sinfulness. Sometimes when somebody commits sins, they have a conscience, right? They have taqwa. They know that, you know, they're aware that their deeds are being presented to the imam of their time. They're aware that there's a day of reckoning, right? So what happens is that this creates a type of guilt, and that guilt also shows itself in type of sadness. Now, what do we do when that sadness occurs? Do we try to, like, just sort of stamp it out? Or do we say that, okay, this is an opportunity for me to repent, right? Now that this is actually a gift from Allah. He's allowing me to experience this bitterness. I can turn it into sweetness. What can I do? By doing tawbah. So here, there's a different perspective on that type of sadness. Now, the last example I'll give for this evening, brothers and sisters, is regarding events that take place, which are bitter events. Part of life is going through bitter events. Somebody who says that they're going to, you know, they're just going to sort of have smooth sailing, right? Nothing, no tests, no trials, that's what they want. Any type of trial, they sort of start shaking at it. That's not what life is meant to be like. We have a very beautiful hadith from our Prophet, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, where he says that he compares the life of a believer to the life of a hypocrite. And this is about, you know, we're talking about lifestyle, Islamic lifestyle. What does he say? He says that for a believer, the likeness of a believer is like the branch which is attached to a tree trunk. That branch, it is going to be shaking. It's going to be moving here and there throughout the course of its life. Right? But what's important? What's important is that it's attached to the trunk. Right? It's not standalone. It's attached to the trunk. It has that support. Yes, it's moving this way and that way. It's not always just stationary. That's the way life is going to be like for a believer. There's going to be ups. There's going to be downs. There's going to be times where we're given. There's times that we're going to be things are going to be taken away. Sometimes there'll be those successes. Sometimes there'll be those failures. But because that branch is attached to that tree trunk, right, it finds its comfort, that stability. And then he compares it to the life of a munafiq. He says a munafiq is somebody who, it's kind of like an iron rod that it lives its life and then it just breaks off. Right? There's no development, there's no growth that takes place. Events that come up in our lives that are bitter, they're opportunities for us to grow. In family life, one of the one of the causes of problems is this approach to happiness and sadness. If my approach is going to be that anytime I have to go through discomfort, anytime I have to have any bitter experiences, that family is not going to be successful. But are they going to truly find happiness? If you talk to parents and you ask them, okay, now that you have children, are you more happy than before? Maybe many of them will be honest with you and say that, you know what? Life is more difficult for me. I can't say that I'm more happy. But then you ask them that, do you find that you have more purpose in life? Are you more content with life? Almost indefinitely, they'll tell you for sure. And not for a moment would I give up this opportunity to be a parent. Now you look at it from the outside, you're like, oh my God, how much sleep you have to sacrifice, how much money you have to sacrifice, how much like hair you have to sacrifice. Right, and good, and your whole life you just give, and you're like, what is happy about that? You're like, no. Right, same thing with marriage. Like, now I have to worry about somebody else, I have to take care of them, I have to deal with all their, you know, whatever. Right, I'm not going to do that. I always want to be myself, I want to be happy. Well, is that happiness? Right, happiness is found in growth. Happiness is found in going through those struggles and learning through that process. And going through the struggles and developing and flourishing like that branch on the tree, which is connected to the trunk. So this, brothers and sisters, is part of the lifestyle that we're encouraged to have. One of where, yes, we're seeking happiness, but not a low-level, shallow sort of thing, which is just tied to our pleasure. True happiness is not found in just defining our low-level pleasure and seeking that. True happiness is found in purpose and in seeking a greater goal. Please recite salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Brothers and sisters, tonight is the ninth night of Muharram. The day of Taswa'a is a very significant day in the history of Islam, and a significant day especially for the lovers and followers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. That was the day that the army from Syria, the supporting army that Yazid had sent, that they joined and they came to Karbala. And thousands of troops had amassed, and it was very clear now which way this was going to go. And you all know that in history, the day of Ashura was actually going to happen on Taswa, meaning that Umar ibn Sa'd had actually ordered for the attack to begin on the ninth day of Muharram. But it was only because of Imam Hussein alayhi salam sending Hadrat Abbas alayhi salam along with a few of the companions asking for a respite of one night that it fell on Ashura. What does that mean for us as believers? The next 2 days should be a little bit different than our usual days. Right, let's try a little bit harder to embody that spirit of grief and mourning, to be more committed. Alhamdulillah, we're trying our best, but inshallah we can try even more to be committed to the principles of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Let's be among those who dedicate our lives to the ihya of the amr, meaning that of keeping alive the mission and the message of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Tonight, inshallah, I want to cover the story of one of the very special martyrs from Karbala who showed us so many things. One of them is that age is not a barrier to success. Age is something which, whether you're old, whether you're young, what matters isn't that. What matters is the principles that you're committed to. He also showed us what it means to really have bravery. And for our children who are present here, the example of Qasim ibn Hassan alayhi salam is your example. Don't think that you can't be Qasim. You have your own challenges that come up. Qasim teaches us how to always do the right thing. Qasim teaches us that even if other people are doing something else, even if everyone is doing something else, we always need to do what's right and what's true. Qasim teaches us that even if people who are older than us are doing the wrong thing, we can still always stand for the truth. And Qasim teaches us that when it comes to sacrifice, we should be willing to give up everything for the sake of truth and for the sake of Allah Ta'ala. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdillah. صلى الله عليك يا ابن رسول الله صلى الله عليك يا ابن علي المرتضى وابن فاطمة الزهراء. Peace and blessings be upon you, O Sayyid al-Shuhada, O leader of martyrs, O ship of salvation, O intercessor, O the one who was slain on the desert sand on the day of Ashura, while his mouth and his lips were thirsty. Peace and blessings be upon you, O noble companions, who gave everything you had for the sake of your Imam, for the sake of Islam. Ya laytana kunna ma'akum fanafuza ma'akum fawzan 'azima. Let's call out to them sincerely, saying, if only we could be with you, we would surely have been with you in attaining that great victory. Peace and blessings be upon those noble martyrs, the elderly amongst them, and the young. Peace be upon Qasim ibn al-Hasan, the son of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba. Let's go back in history to the time of the martyrdom of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba. Imam Hussein alayhi salam goes to see him. It's very difficult for him to bear his older brother. Seeing what has been done to him, the injustice, the abandonment of some of those people who had previously pledged allegiance to him. To see the poison seeping through his body, Imam Hassan alayhi salam tells his brother, "Oh Hussein, I'm leaving my family behind me. Oh Hussein, take care of them for me. Be a father to them, oh Hussein. Oh Hussein, when I die, bury me next to my grandfather, Rasulullah." Imam Hussein alayhi salam is overcome with grief. His brother asks him, "Oh my brother, why do you cry like this?" Imam Hussein says, "I'm crying over what I'm seeing is happening to you." Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam responds, "Oh Hussein, la yawma ka yawmika ya Aba Abdullah. There is no day like your day, oh Abu Abdullah. My body has been afflicted with poison. Soon I will be killed. I will leave this world. But as for you and your family, you will be taken to a strange land. They will slaughter you. Your children will be killed. Your women will be taken prisoner." Imam Hussein alayhi salam fulfills the promise he had given to his brother Hassan. He took care of the children of Imam Hassan. History narrates that seven amongst them were among the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura. Now let's go to the event that took place on the night of Ashura. Imam Hussein alayhi salam has gathered all of his companions around him. He tells them that it's very clear that the enemy only wants to kill me. You can take the cover in the darkness of the night. You can go away from here. But one by one, the companions pledged their loyalty to Imam Hussein. Imam Hussein alayhi salam promises them that tomorrow will be the day of your martyrdom. Tomorrow will be the day that you will be entering Jannah. After the gathering disperses, there is a boy who comes to Imam Hussein. He was listening the whole time. He asks him, "Oh my uncle, am I going to be amongst those who will attain martyrdom tomorrow?" Imam Hussein alayhi salam looks at his nephew Qasim ibn al-Hasan. He asks him a question, "Oh Qasim, tell me, what do you think about death in this situation?" Without hesitation, Qasim responds, "Ahla min al-asal, death is sweeter to me than honey." Imam Hussein alayhi salam promises him that in that case, then you too will be amongst those who are counted as martyrs tomorrow. On the day of Ashura, the enemy has gathered. The companions go forward one by one. Then it comes to the time for the Ahlul Bayt, for the family of Imam Hussein. Qasim alayhi salam sees the opportunity. He goes to seek permission from his uncle Imam Hussein, who he now treats as his father. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees Qasim, he doesn't respond to his request.
Instead, he takes him in his arms. He embraces him. The maqatil say that both of them were crying so much. Maybe Imam Hussein alayhi salam is thinking in his mind, I made the promise to Hassan al-Mujtaba. I made the promise to my older brother that I would take care of his sons. But it's Qasim himself who is asking to go to the battlefield. How can I not let him go at this moment? After some time, Imam Hussein alayhi salam reluctantly agrees for Qasim to enter the battlefield. Qasim goes forward. He cries out in that... He's just a boy in the battlefield, but he cries out so bravely, إِن تُنْكِرُونِي فَأَنَا ابْنُ الْحَسَنِ إِن تُنْكِرُونِي فَأَنَا ابْنُ الْحَسَنِ سِبْتُ النَّبِيَّ الْمُصْطَفَى الْمُرْتَهَنِ مُؤْتَمَنْ هَذَا الْحُسَيْنُ كَالْأَسِيرِ الْمُرْتَهَنِ بين أناس لا سقوا صوب المزن. If you don't know me, I am Qasim. I am the son of Hassan. I am the son of Hassan, the grandson of the Prophet. This is Hussein. He's like a prisoner. He is trapped. These people have taken him as prisoner. May they never get the bounty of rain falling upon them. Qasim enters the battlefield. They say that he was too young to have any armor on him. They say that one of his sandals had come undone. And without even caring about what other people would say, he bent down to fix his sandal. This is a sign of true bravery when somebody does what's right without caring what other people say. Qasim advances towards the enemy. It's a boy fighting grown men. How much damage can he do? They say that he fought very bravely. There was one amongst the enemy. His name was Humaid. He says that, I saw this boy approaching us. I was very surprised. His face was so beautiful. It was like the new moon in the dark night. It was shining so beautifully. He came to us. He was fighting us. There was one man next to me who, when he saw him, he says that, I want to go and do away with this boy. I looked at him. Humaid says, I looked at him. I said that, how can you say these things? He's just a boy. But the man says that, I don't care. Look at how evil somebody can become. They can become like the manifestation of Shaitan. He says that, I will do away with him. He spurs his horse forward. He raises his sword. One moment, Qasim is fighting the enemy. The next moment, Qasim is crying out, Ya Amma! Oh, my uncle! Imam Hussein alayhi salam charges towards the battlefield. His sword is raised. He goes and attacks the person who had struck his nephew, Qasim ibn al-Hassan. There's great commotion at that time. The horses go towards the enemy soldier. Qasim is left on the ground. His body is in pain. Imam Hussein alayhi salam nears his face towards Qasim. He tells him that, oh Qasim, my dear nephew, it's very difficult for me to see you like this for not having been able to respond to your call for help. Qasim is in so much pain, but remember that for him, death is sweeter than honey. Maybe his body is in pain, but his soul is tasting the sweetness of martyrdom in the presence of his Imam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam is overcome with tears. Then we see a scene. We saw how Imam Hussein alayhi salam had embraced Qasim before he went to the battlefield. Now Imam Hussein alayhi salam is embracing Qasim again. But why is he embracing him now? Why does he have him in his arms? Because he is dragging him away from the battlefield. Humaid ibn Muslim, he says that, I then asked the question, who was that boy with that bright face, that like the new moon in the dark night? They told him that that was Qasim, the son of Hassan, the son of Ali. That new moon in the dark night has now set. ألا لعنة الله على القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. We ask Allah Ta'ala to accept this majlis from us, to make these tears be tears that are accepted by Him and that are a source of His pleasure, and inshallah be rewarded on the Day of Judgment. We ask Allah Ta'ala for the opportunity for these tears to clean our souls of any pollution, spiritual pollution. We ask Allah Ta'ala to grant us the honor of being among the awaiters of the Imam of our time and to hasten the reappearance of the Imam of our time. We ask Allah Ta'ala to help all those who are oppressed, especially the people of Afghanistan, the people of Palestine, the people of Yemen. We ask Him to help our children to aspire to the great values that they are taught by the likes of Qasim ibn al-Hassan. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa alihi al-tahirin.
Inshallah, if you could all stand up for Latmiya. Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.
سنتر الله أبا عبد الله سنتر الله أبا عبد الله سنتر الله أبا عبد الله سنتر الله أبا. Once again, I will start my walk to you, oh my Hussein. Karbala, Karbala, to you, oh my Hussein. Karbala, Karbala, oh my love, my love, precious. Every step I take, my love rises. Every step taken, inshallah, I will make with the rolling to Sandarullah. With Sandarullah, Abadillah, with Sandarullah. I see, in my heart I will call your name, your name. I will die calling you, oh Hussein, oh Hussein. I will rise when I call,
oh Hussein, oh
Hussein. I see, I see
your flag.
Fly in the sky until the day I die. I will raise it high, Hussein, Darullah. Hussein, Darullah. Abba, Abdullah. Hussein, Darullah. Abba. Huh? Hussein,
Darullah.
Ya Hussein,
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.
صلوا على محمد وآل محمد. Shedding tears, waiting for you, gives meaning to your lovers, Mola. Life without you is worse than death for us, O the son of Zahra. Shedding tears, waiting for you, gives meaning to your lovers, Mola. Life without you is worse than death for us, O the son of Zahra. Shedding tears, waiting for you, gives meaning to your lovers, Mola. Life without you is worse than death for us, O the son of Zahra. Every step we take is for you, the waiting lion of Haidar. Every breath of ours we wish nothing but to gain your favor. Let us all be the final sign. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. Let us all be the final sign. We are ready, ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready. Every year we come together, mourning for the son of Ali, in the hope that our tears bring us closer to you, Mahdi. See the beats on our chest as the war drums for the oppressors. Your flags are a shield for us against any of the aggressors. They will pay for their every crime. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. They will pay for their every crime. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. O lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, look how Quds is waiting for you. Look how all the oppressed people of the world are praying for you. The time has come to take Mecca from the hands of the impure. If tyranny is a disease, then we are the only cure. All have gone, now it is our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, look how Quds is waiting for you. Look how all the oppressed people of the world are praying for you. The time has come to take Mecca from the hands of the impure. If tyranny is a disease, then we are the only cure. All have gone, now it is our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. All have gone, now it is our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. Oh, the master of our time. We are ready, we are ready. Sallu ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa Ali Muhammad. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليك يا أبا عبد الله وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك. عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار. ولا جعله الله آخر العهد مني لزيارتكم. Everyone. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا برحمتك يا أرحم الراحمين صلوا على محمد وآل محمد
I will come again here for Hussein here coming chained here to Karbala I will come again here for Hussein here coming chained here to Karbala I will come again here for Hussein here coming chained here to Karbala I will come again here For Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here. For Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again here. For Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala. I will come again. Will cry for you, time will pass and you remain. In the heart a voice keeps calling out, O Hussein. With 72 men you face the tyrannical Yazid the ruler. O Hussein, ghariban bi Karbala on the holy day.
Thank you for helping us serve our community these past 2 years.
Thank you for trusting us with your children and our youth of our community.
Thank you for believing in our mission and contributing at every chance you had.
It's only been 2 years. 2 years since we opened up our youth community center.
But our work has just begun and our youth deserve much more.
This Muharram, help us raise funds so we may pay off a portion of our mortgage and reach our goal of becoming debt-free.
We currently owe $400,000 on our building. But becoming debt-free is critical to allowing us to provide more youth programs and initiatives at a lower cost.
Our goal is to raise $100,000 during these holy nights of Muharram. In the name of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, thank you.
In the name of Imam Hussein, thank you.
Thank you.
I will come again here. For Hussein here, coming chained here to Karbala, I will come.